When it comes to choosing a supermarket, why not stick to the facts? Fact is, Albertsons is just better. Nicer, fresher, faster, and friendlier. Come on in and see for yourself. For a delicious dinner this week, stop by the meat department and get USDA Choice Beef Tri-Tip Roast, untrimmed boneless, for just $3.99 a pound. And for a sweet and healthy treat, pick up local Cuties Tangerines 3-pound bags for $2.99 each. Fresher meats, sweeter produce, better deals. Albertsons. Fact is, it's just better.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Good morning, Fire Nation, and welcome once again to the Fiery Enabler Show. It is so amazing to have you here. As you know, my name is Petra Williams, and I am here to help you live a magnificent and awesome life. If you are new to the show, welcome. This is our second episode. So stoked to have you here. Once again, this show is ready to inspire you and motivate you to live the life that you are meant to live by sharing inspirational stories with you from phenomenal people who are doing some amazing things. And they're not different people. They haven't been blessed by any specific talent. They have just taken on life's challenges and achieved greatness through their hard work and through their mindset and through taking action. And today, once again, I have a phenomenal woman, Claire. Now, Claire and I haven't officially met in person. I was introduced to Claire by a mutual friend of ours called Jennifer, and I posted my interview with Veronica Farmer on LinkedIn, and my friend Jen said, "Hey man, you absolutely need to meet this woman on fire. Her name's Claire and she is phenomenal." And of course, straight away I jumped on that because I go by recommendations. You know, women on fire, we have to connect. And I phoned Claire, and boy was Jen right. Claire is a woman on fire. And she lives in Melbourne, and I live in Brisbane. So we had a telephone conversation, and we immediately clicked. And what I loved about Claire is just her absolute zest for life, her enthusiasm. She laughs a lot. She has so much spunk and drive. And, you know, it is phenomenal. Claire is now in her 60s, and I can tell you she has more energy than many of us put together, which is absolutely incredible. And what Claire is going to share with us today is her phenomenal story of overcoming adversity and triumph, and how she tapped into her inner strength to overcome what she went through. So, Claire, I really want to welcome you. And first of all, I want to ask you, are you ready to ignite?
Absolutely. Another woman on fire.
Fabulous. That's what I love to hear. So, Claire, we noticed that your accent is not Australian, so it's a little bit different. Tell us where that wonderful accent is from, how you came to be in the wonderful country of Australia.
Oh, gosh. Okay, 5 years ago, I came to Australia from England. My place of birth, though, is Scotland. So coming to Australia was a massive step. I think I just turned 60, and it's one of the best decisions I've ever made in my whole life. Australia, as you say, is a wonderful, wonderful country. I think it's got a very can-do attitude, which I love. So coming here 5 years ago, to be with my son, Stephen, and his wife, Jo. And at that time, we had one granddaughter, Elsa. She's now 8, going on 28.
And, isn't that always the case?
Oh, a very, very, very smart little girl. And we've now got her little sister, Heather, who's goods before this weekend. So I've had the privilege of seeing these little girls, especially Heather, as I was here when she was born. So have, you know, every week with these little girls is just, you learn so much from the little ones. They are just amazing. So I'm so delighted that I made that decision to come over here and not miss all this wonderful adventure with these little girls.
That's so amazing because there are so many people in my experience that live for retirement. It's sort of like that's the end. And sort of when you reach your 60s, you're almost written off these days as not being a valuable member of society anymore. And it's almost it's like, oh, you know, you're 60 now, you know, go and retire somewhere nicely and go and live the rest of your 30 years, you know, somewhere. And yet you find that and you went, no, even though I'm 60, I am going to take uproot from what I know to come to Australia to be with my son. So where did you find the courage? Because I would imagine that many people at home in Scotland would have told you, forget it. You know, what are you doing? You know, what are you going to? So, you know, how did you find the courage and what drove you to make that decision?
It's a great question because there were certainly opposition to my coming out here, both from some friends and some family. Maybe not opposition, but just a lack of understanding of how important family is and how difficult I felt my life was when I was living in England on my own, running a business, all of that going well, you know, had my own home, all of that. But, you know, the house was empty. Whereas I'm looking around this house this morning and there's toys lying around because the kids were here a few days ago. And I don't want to tidy them up because every time I see something on the floor, I think, oh, right, that's what we were doing here. So it's amazing how it can change your whole outlook on life. And the courage came, I think, from imagining what my life would be like in the future if I didn't take any action. So I remember before I became 60, I was talking to my friends about, maybe I should go out there. And a lot of people were saying, oh, but you've got your own business, you've got your own home. You know, why do you want to risk all of that? So my approach was, well, I'm healthy now and things are going well now, but I am getting older, so who knows what might happen next? So as
Absolutely.
I am healthy, I want to really enjoy my life. So what else can I do to really enhance my life at the moment? So to me, it was a complete no-brainer. I remember distinctly the telephone conversation I had with my son, and I was saying to him, do you know what? I think it's time for me to make a move somewhere else. I was going to sell up and go to a different part of England or Scotland or somewhere in the UK. I hadn't really considered going further afield. And he said to me, oh, really? You're thinking of moving? And I said, yeah, I've got itchy feet. I think it's time for me to be doing something very different. So he said to me the immortal words, well, Joe and I have talked often about if Mum ever wanted to come and come to Australia, we'd be delighted to have her here. Now, we've never had that conversation. I've been out for lovely holidays and, you know, really loved it. Never considered that I could actually live here. So as soon as he said those words to me, there was this kind of energy. This went completely through my body. And I thought, that's it. That's the answer. So we very quickly got on to what do we need to do. It took nearly 3 years to get the visa, so it wasn't like it was a quick fix. But that whole energy and courage, it was like switching flicking on a switch. It was like, yeah, that's it. That is the answer. And we all just worked together to get this in place. And there was loads to do. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't wasn't an easy transition. So much to do. Just crazy.
I know, Australia's quite crazy with the visa law, aren't they?
Well, I think it's great that they're very particular who they let in.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that, and I from what I'm hearing is like you're very clear on what you wanted and why you wanted it, and that's just fantastic. And I think that's a really great message to give out there to the listeners. And so tell us, so you came over here and you said that, you know, you enjoyed being with your family and things were going really well, and then something happened. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, I was running my own business, all part-time, because I thought, well, I'm in my 60s now. I don't really want to be working full-time anymore. I've done 100 years of that. And although I've enjoyed my work, you know, I came out here to be with family. So, you know, that was really my focus. But having my own business in coaching and training, leadership training, but, you know, I get a lot from that, and I feel that I've got quite a bit to give as well. So the night, another date imprinted on my memory, 22nd of October 2015, so it's just over a year ago, I was giving a coaching talk at a friend's house, a very lovely friend called Nikki Ellis, and she let me she hosted an evening for me where I could, she filled the room for me while we did it together. And so there maybe was about 25 women in the room. And I was talking to these lovely ladies about how the brain works and how it can help us goal set. Because we're all talking these days about focusing on goals and, you know, all of that. Yeah. I just learned a whole new strategy from an education company called Authentic Education in Sydney. Fabulous company.
Yeah, I know them well. Yeah, they do some great stuff.
Absolutely amazing. So I'd just been back from there, having done quite a few courses with them. So I was literally all fired up to share all this information. I do get very excited when I've got new stuff to share and lovely women in the room. And, oh, great. So I'm demonstrating on the we call it a flip chart in the UK. Amazingly, in Australia, you call it butcher's paper. And the first time I thought, well, what are they talking about? So I had to be explained to me that it was paper that you used to wrap up your meat that you bought in the
Ah, how interesting. Because I call it a flip chart. That's interesting, isn't it?
Oh, so many people here call it butcher's paper. And I thought, what crazy country have I come to, you know? anyway, I'm drawing on the flip chart and I'm drawing the brain and talking about different sections of the brain and how we can goal set and use all that information and understand how our brain and our body works to work in harmony with our goals and our aspirations. Unbeknown to me, it's crazy, you couldn't make this up really. Unbeknown to me, as I'm drawing the brain on the flip chart paper, my brain is actually bleeding. So I'm having a brain hemorrhage.
Wow.
Which is a kind of stroke. And it was massive, seemingly. I didn't feel anything apart from a bit lightheaded. But I did notice that my arm was going a bit squeegee and my right leg was kind of getting a bit stuck to the floor. And I thought, oh, what is going on here? And I just put it down to overexcitement about, you know, this whole thing I wanted to share with everybody. And then I tried to turn around and I thought, God, I'm really dragging my leg. What is going on here? And I thought, you know, I'll deal with that later. I just want to carry on and finish, you know, what I want to share. So we were nearly at the end of the talk, which was about 45 minutes, I think. And my daughter-in-law, thankfully, she was in the audience. Now, Jo is a doctor, so she recognised the signs of a stroke. Now, I didn't have a clue what was happening. So,
well, you don't, because what are the symptoms of a stroke? Like, do we really know the symptoms, really? Yeah, that's amazing.
Well,
carry on, yeah.
Well, I mean, we've got that advert on TV about how, you know, you get a facial droop and slurred speech. I didn't have any of that. So it didn't occur to me that I was having a stroke. I just thought I was a bit maybe overexcited, a bit. I was enjoying myself. There wasn't anything negative about it at all. So anyway, my daughter-in-law got me to sit down, and she's saying, just raise your right arm, Claire. And my arm was completely floppy. It was like a rag doll. And I thought, uh-oh, what's going on here? So she was on the phone straight away and got an ambulance within minutes and got me into hospital, literally saving my life. I mean, just bless her, just incredible. And before I knew it, I was being hustled into an ambulance. I'm thinking, what's going on here? So I thought I was maybe going in for a checkup just to see what was wrong. then my son's arriving at the hospital. Oh, Lord, he looked great. He looked absolutely shocked. And I thought, I don't know, what's he doing here, you know? Oh, hi, how are you doing? I'm still talking, you know. That the thing is that if I'd lost my speech, as many people do, that would have killed me. I'm such a talker.
I can tell.
That was very kind that I didn't lose my voice. So he's there and he's talking to the doctor. Now, unbeknown to me, the doctor's saying to him, now, the brain bleed is so extensive, we're not really sure whether she's going to survive or not. Now,
really?
Yeah, so it was life-threatening. And I'm, you know, still chatting away. Now, he's talking to the doctor and getting all this real information. I'm oblivious. I'm, you know, I don't know what's going on. And so he's having to deal with the prospect of, well, this might be it.
Wow.
So it was only a few months later that he told me this whole story, because I couldn't have taken in that information. It's just too shocking. It's just too much, really. So
of course.
That's something about stroke and illness that I really want to stress, that yes, the person is going through a lot, but my goodness, the family, the people near to them are going through a completely different scenario that the patient's not even aware of.
Yeah.
So it's really made me think about, you know, trying to get information out to doctors and family as well, that the family needs help. They need support. I got loads of help. I was getting expert, top of the range help. And, you know, what was happening to my family? So I think that's really important that when people...
Yeah,
are
I agree
ill,
with you there.
There has to be an all-round care of everybody in the situation, not just the patients.
Absolutely, because I used to work for the Cancer Council over in New South Wales, and what often happened to the carers was the people who cared for the cancer patients, their health just failed because they weren't looking after themselves. They were looking after, you know, the person with cancer.
Yes.
And we did a massive drive to say, you know, you need to look after yourself. There's no use having two sick people. So absolutely, and that is really a message that needs to be brought forward. Absolutely.
I think the other thing around that topic is that part of my recovery, part of the focus has been, well, how can I lift the impact of this stroke from my family? And the way I can do that is to get better, you know, I just feel that they've been through enough, thank you very much, you know. So what can I do to try and alleviate the impact of this? Because they're still helping me, you know, but they don't need the constant worry. So how much can I do? What things can I do to make my life easier, better, so that all the burden is not on them.
So tell me, what happened? What was the repercussion of the stroke? Like, did you have to learn to walk again? And well, obviously you could still talk, so that was a bonus.
Absolutely.
Tell us about the recovery.
Well, the day after, I woke up and it was shocking. Even thinking about it now, I think, gosh, did that really happen? I mean, my whole right side was completely paralyzed. So it was like there was a zipper down in the middle of my body. So my left side was as normal, absolutely fine. All of my right side, my leg, my arm, my back, my bum, the whole lot, was completely paralyzed. So that was absolutely shocking. Because I hadn't felt any of that the night before. But so waking up to that was, shocking is the only word I can come up with this morning. And so I just cried. I think that was the only thing to do. Because it was totally shocking. It was terrifying. Literally, I couldn't move anything on my right side.
Wow.
So even to get to the toilet or get out of bed, there was a hoist above the bed. So it was a kind of straight jacket. Not quite.
I love the description. I could just see, like, you're half paralyzed, and now they're putting you in a straitjacket. Like, where does it end?
So they're hoisting me up from this thing from the ceiling. And I think, oh my Lord, you know, and there's two nurses trying to navigate this thing so that they can whisk me over to the wheelchair and get me in there and then get me into the toilet. So it was quite a to-do, really. So we had a few weeks of this, and after a while I thought I could see how anxious some of the nurses were. They were just being so careful that they didn't bump me or drop me. So two of them navigating this thing and my one leg flailing about probably and the other leg not doing anything. So at one point I said to them, look, can I have the controls? You know, and that'll give you an extra hand. And they said, oh, right, okay. So I got the controls and I thought, oh, great, a new toy.
I've just got visions of this movies. You know, in the movies, how they push the button and the bed goes up and down, putting a controller in a patient's hand. Interesting.
Oh, it was so empowering. I just loved it. So I would press that button and I would pretend I was somebody in a lift that's operating the lift, a lift operator, and I would press the up button and I would say going up hats and umbrellas, and then going down ladies underwear.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
So I love having the control in my own hands, and I love the it made me laugh, but it made the staff laugh as well, and it took the whole seriousness out of this procedure that was just awful, you know. But people start to laugh, you know, it's not so bad. I've been through the life-threatening bit. This is the recovery. This isn't anything to be fearful of or upset by. So that really helped my approach to recovery. You know, what can I find that's quite funny about this? And imagining yourself, you know, dangling from the ceiling, it's quite funny, you know?
That sounds amazing. And I mean, I just love your attitude, because, you know, they say that attitude is 80%. Of anything, really. And you have such a positive attitude. And when we spoke earlier, you said that you were walking on a walking frame and the doctor had said to you, oh, well, you know, this is probably as good as it's going to get. Oh. And tell us what you thought about that comment.
Oh, my goodness. That immediately takes me back. That was about April. So I'd been home for a couple of months. And again, my daughter-in-law Jo came with me to these appointments, which was so helpful because as the patient, you know, I'm still able to write things down and try and remember, but it's a very emotional and challenging situation to be in. So to have my daughter-in-law that I'm very close to, and the fact that she's a doctor, she's very calm. I'm all fiery and up and down. She's very calm and level-headed. So I thought, she's the perfect person to come with me to these appointments. So we would talk all through beforehand, and I would say, now, if I forget any of this, could you chip in? Which she was very keen to do to help me. So this doctor, who'd never met me before, started saying things like, so, Claire, you do know that you should be mourning for your past life, that you will never get back again, you know, you'll never be the same. And this recovery, I mean, you're doing quite well. You've got a walking frame now. You're not in the wheelchair now. But this is probably, I mean, you might get some more improvement. But this is probably as good as it gets. So I just completely broke down, burst into tears, you know, sobbing and sniffling and all of that. And my daughter-in-law is trying to, you know, calm things down. And I thought, oh, this is awful. So my motivation, I'd been, my resilience, everything, it just seemed to disappear down the drain in that minute when the doctor was talking to me. And so that was a horrible point.
Did she say, Claire, mourn your old life? Is that what she said? Mourn your old life because this is as good as it's going to get. Wow, that is a phenomenally bad thing to say to a patient, isn't it? Because, I mean, as you said, you're really in such an emotional stage and you're using all of your strength to recover. And for a professional doctor to say, sweetheart, mourn your own life, wow, I am surprised. I am not surprised that you broke down because that is a very horrible thing to say.
Now, it's interesting that I've talked to my daughter-in-law, Jo, about this since then, because I just couldn't believe this was happening. So since then, she said to me, well, that's not exactly what she said. That's what you heard. So
interesting.
Like this communication thing. So maybe she used one of those words. Maybe it wasn't exactly that phrase that I'm relating. But I've now built it up into this big thing. but the effect it had on me was devastating. So whatever words she used weren't the right ones for me, you know. But the exact words that she used, I'm either misinterpreting or mishearing. So that's an interesting thing about communication, that when we're emotional and we're vulnerable, we will hear things that actually weren't said. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, so, that is really interesting. And even whatever is said, we attach a meaning to what is said, you know, and it's the emotion, we allow the emotion to run our thoughts. And that, of course, then leads to more emotion. So it's really incredible. It's an incredible mindset game, isn't it? So tell me, how did you pick yourself up off the floor? And and keep going strong.
Well, we came out of that, I would call it an interview really, more than an appointment. We came out of that and I was just in a terrible state, shaking and all sorts of things. So she sat me down outside in the lovely sunshine here. And what she did was, she said, look, it's just about the right time to pick Heather up from creche. So Heather is the little granddaughter, and it just so happens that Jo works at that hospital and the creche is literally just a minute or two away. So she went and got the little one. Now this little one is, if she hears any music, she just starts dancing. So she came skipping along the corridor, and even just hearing her mum and she talk as they came along the corridor, hearing their voices and hearing her little footsteps, By the time she walked along the corridor, I dried my tears, there was a smile on my face, and it was big hugs and cuddles with Grandma, and I felt fine. So isn't that amazing that these little people can just press a different button, and I just gave her, and she gave me, the biggest hug ever. She didn't even notice the tears. She's just chatting and cuddling and wriggling about. And I just felt instantly better. And in that moment, I thought, this is why I'm here in Australia, you know, to be with these little people. And over these months, I've realized how much they've helped me to recover. To be able to transform my mood that day. She just flipped the switch, and there I was. I was Grandma again, and everything was fine, and my resilience was back up, and my courage was back up. It's just amazing how much little ones can give you, and they don't even realize they're giving it to you. They're just so natural and so loving.
That's so wonderful, because often I stand in supermarkets and we stand in the queue, you know, and I love people watching. You know, like you, I'm very curious about human behavior. And I watch young children, and they have no limitations, no limiting beliefs. They just talk to everyone, look at everyone, do whatever they want. They have a real zest for life. And I often look at these beautiful young children and I go, when does it all go so wrong?
I know.
When do we lose that? Yeah.
It's, and I think we all have it. Recently I picked her up from creche, little Heather, and we walked across the road, and there's lots of people coming out of the train station, so I always stand back because my balance still isn't perfect, that's for sure. So we just stand at the side to let people pass. So she starts waving at everybody, and everybody starts waving back, you know, and I think it's so natural. And the whole crowd of people passed, and she turned to me. She's three, mind you. She turned to me and she said, "Grandma, I love people." She's not saying it for effect. It's how she feels. She does love people. And I thought, that is just wonderful. And I love the way people react to her. And, you know, the older one, Ailsa, she used to talk to people on the train when I used to pick her up from creche as well. And people would be looking quite sad on the train. And then she would talk to them, and they would just perk up. and they've got a magic. Children have got a magic. And as you say, you know, where does it go in us adults? I mean, I still talk to people on the train, you know. whether you want to talk to me or not, you know. But I think a lot of adults lose that ability to be open and, you know, be curious about other people and
You know where I think it happens, Claire, is when we go to school. And so because I used to be a former teacher. And I often watch when it's the beginning of the year, which is January here, and I believe it's September over in the US, is, you know, when you see these young kids skipping to school and mum's excited and children are excited. And I often feel a degree of sadness because we still have that old, archaic, industrial educational system, which tells children to sit down, be still. And that's not the way children work. And if you're different in any shape or form at school, you get picked on. You know, if you don't learn the way they expect you to learn, you are labeled something. And I believe that's where it happens, where that school system just forces everyone into the box. You know, and I think of the movie The Wall. Was it Pink Floyd? Where they go, they all walk into a mincer.
Yes.
They all sort of walk into a mincer, and the kids are going to get churned out. And that's sort of how I see school. And I think the education system needs to change because the world has changed. And we need to nurture creativity and playfulness, you know. So that's where I think it all goes wrong.
Well, I do agree with you. And you're describing my childhood. You're describing what it was like for me at school. But I've got to say that the Fairfield school that my older granddaughter Ailsa goes to, they are amazing. They're very much into encouraging kids to share, to talk, to be themselves, to discover. And the creche that they've both been to at the Austin Hospital is just absolutely second to none. I mean, of course, they do have to have discipline and so on, but it's not at the expense of the children expressing themselves. I mean, the little ones at creche, like Heather, can stand up and do, what did I do at the weekend? And stand in front of the class and, they're doing a presentation, aren't they? You know? And I couldn't have done that at that age. I couldn't have done it at 10, 12, you know. What I've observed in my short time here, my 5 years here, they're encouraging kids to be more confident in themselves and to express that and to be able to stand in front of their peers and, you know, bring something in, whether it's a teddy or whatever it is, and just talk to the rest of the class about it. That's presenting, you know? And it's one of the things that we all fear is standing up in front of people. But they're learning.
Well, that's what they say.
From two onwards. Well, yes, I think a lot of people, what is it, spiders, death, and presenting?
So I wonder, though, if we can come back to, and of course, it's wonderful that the children, of course, it's different from our upbringing. And so I wonder, though, coming from the background that you came from, how did you then get, how do you continue to motivate yourself? Because when we spoke, you said you actually started speaking to yourself with love and respect, because self-talk is such an important part of our lives. And the story we tell ourselves, and, you know, you could have easily, which would have been an easy way, just fallen into a heap and gone, my life is over. But you didn't.
Yeah.
What did you do to keep to love your body and to keep yourself motivated?
Well, I mean, it was a choice. All of these things are choices that we make consciously. So I remember it very clearly in the hospital bed. I think it was maybe day two after the stroke. And something just popped into my head about a Facebook post that a man that I'd only just met, a friend, called Bill Gassiamas. And he posted something about a time that he had been in hospital, I think for a brain tumour, so something something quite serious. And he had met someone else in his ward who was really angry about his arm not responding, not working. And he was swearing at his arm and getting terribly upset and just awful. So Bill said to him, look, why don't you pretend your arm is your friend and talk to it the way you would to a friend? So all of this is coming back into my head, and the Bill's story was that this man's arm started to work. He started to be able, very slowly, to lift something. He was trying to lift something that he couldn't do when he was shouting at it and being angry.
Wow.
So putting the anger aside and changing his language to himself, the doctors and the nurses were seeing this man actually use his hands for the first time. So I thought, I don't know why that Facebook post popped into my head, because it was a fleeting thing. It was a few seconds, you know, maybe a year before my story. And so I thought, well, it's not my body's fault that it can't move. So I was thinking, so how do I her, my little granddaughters. I use a really loving talk to them. So why don't I use that same kind of talk to myself? And what would I do with them if they were here now and they were feeling a bit upset or things weren't working well for them? So what I started doing, now I've no idea what the staff or the other patients thought. Quite honestly, I didn't care at that point what anybody thought I was doing. I'm lying in the bed, and so my left arm is working fine. So I got my left arm to lift my floppy right arm and start kissing it.
What? You started kissing your arm?
Yes. I'm kissing my hands from my fingers all the way up to my elbow, all the way up to as far as I can reach round. So I'm kissing it tenderly and saying, you'll be okay. We'll do this together, sweetheart. Because I call my granddaughter sweetheart. Come on, darling, we'll do this together. And my mood was very calm when I was doing that.
Wow.
So that was my approach about language and talking to myself in a way that was loving and nurturing to myself. So I found that really helpful, and I started using, I suppose I was contradicting the staff, because they would say to me, now come on Claire, move your bad leg. So I would say, well, actually, I don't have a bad leg. I've got a learning leg. And they would say, what? I know. And I would think, I don't care. This is working for me. I don't care what they think. I'm not calling my leg a bad leg.
Amazing.
And actually, that is still going on with therapists. And there was actually one this week. We were practicing going up and down a staircase in the hospital, because I'm still going for treatment therapies. So this therapist is saying, now just remember, use your good leg first when you're walking up the stairs, and use your bad leg when you're walking down. So if you just remember, the good leg goes to heaven and the bad leg goes to hell. And
what?
I thought, oh, you are kidding me. There's no way. I'm in this group of people, and they're all saying, oh, yeah, go up to heaven and down to hell. And I thought, no way. So I thought, I've had this conversation so many times with so many different people. So I thought, I'll do it differently this time. So it was just a couple of days ago. So she came over to me, and she's repeating this, and I said, so I looked her straight in the eye, and I said, well, actually... and I was patting my learning leg, and so I wasn't talking to the therapist. I was looking at her, but I was talking to my leg, and I was saying,
yeah.
Don't listen to her. Don't listen to her. We haven't got a bad leg. Because, you know, you're doing fine. You're absolutely fine. You're not a bad leg. Absolutely not. And so she just kind of laughed and walked away, and I thought, I'm not having this. I refuse to allow people to use negative language about this body of mine that's doing its best to get better. So it's my language, but it's also not accepting the negative language of other people about my body. It's my body, you know? I can talk to it any way I like, but I don't want people to be putting it down, as it were. And it's not going to hell. Of course it's not.
And, you know, that... Because I'm not sure if you do NLP, Claire, but because I do neurolinguistic programming, and because that is exactly what we talk about. It's the language of the brain and how we communicate to ourselves. And so what you put in, you get out. And so that has really worked for you, because I saw on Facebook just the other day, you did something on the treadmill. Was it on the treadmill? You started doing something on the treadmill. Tell us, what did you do?
So I'm learning to jog.
Yeah. Also, high five you.
I'm on the treadmill, and this is my physio, Anna, from the Royal Talbot Hospital. She's been working with me since January, which is absolutely marvellous. Once a week, she comes and meets me at the gym, the YMCA that I go to. So So I'm on the treadmill, and I say, look, can you video this for me? Because I'm going to try and jog. So she stands at the end of the treadmill, puts her phone on, and I'm walking, and then I'm walking a bit faster, and then she's saying, lift your legs, lift your legs. So I did maybe a few steps, but it was jogging. Okay, I'm holding on, but it's definitely jogging. And I thought, well, that's amazing, because I couldn't jog before the stroke.
That is amazing. And from a doctor, saying to you, accept this frame because this is it, to going jogging, you know, when you've been told, you know, you're bound to a life of immobility, and you've worked on your mindset, your attitude, you've remembered what you hear for your beautiful children and your beautiful grandchildren and your family. And also, I just love the attitude where you're going, how can I get better so I'm not a burden on my family, and how can I make it easier for them? And wow, that is such a selfless thing to think of, and I just think your attitude is phenomenal, and I really want to acknowledge you for your spirit and for what you've achieved thus far. It is rocking awesome. And so I wonder then, what's, because not all of us are going to have strokes out there, hopefully, yet there are many people out there going through their own adversity, through their own difficult time, and they may be feeling down, and they may be feeling immobilized, and that they can't move, whether it be emotionally or mentally or whatever that manifests for them. What message do you have for those guys?
I suppose for me, it's never give up. Find out more about your condition. Learn as much as you can. Read as much as you can. Get inspiration from other people. Never ever give up. I'm still curious to find out, you know, what more can I do? Physically, and that's the thing. I've got a lovely friend, Melina, who was in the next bed to me in hospital, and we've met every week since January for coffee, and it's fabulous being able to support each other. Selena sometimes says to me that it still upsets her that her life has changed so much and she wants back what she had. Now, we're different women, obviously. She's a lot younger than I am, so I can understand where she's coming from. But when I talk to her about that, I say, well, if I get back what I had before, what was coming was a stroke. So I don't want to go back there. I don't want to go back there and relive all of that and have the lead up to that. So I don't want to just be what I was before, because that was leading to a stroke. What I want is better lifestyle than I had before. So I want to be thriving, not just having survived this. So I've done a lot of work and reading on nutrition and things like having turmeric and all these, what I would have said, weird and wonderful things. But you know, it's helping me. That's great. So
absolutely, that is great.
You know, I'm at the gym two or three times a week and out walking every day and going swimming and even doing Tai Chi in the park and all sorts of things that are completely new. So it's not hankering for things lost. It's a curiosity about what's to come and what's new in my life.
Amazing.
And that includes people, because it's having something like this, which is changing, you know, a condition. It's a bit like divorce, which I've done twice. as my elder granddaughter said to me the other day when I told her about my second marriage and divorce, she just very calmly said, "Oh, Grandma, is that a bit over the top?" Having two marriages and two divorces. Anyway, what I wanted to say was, you know, when we get divorced, sometimes people can't cope with it. And having this condition is similar in that I've lost some friends. I know that I have,
wow.
But they just can't deal with this Claire, who is physically very, and certainly initially I was mentally different as well. I think I'm pretty well back to normal in that respect. But yes, my whole body, life, everything's changed. And some people can't cope with that. And, you know, we've just got to let those people go. And
yeah.
As that happens, other people come into our lives that actually are more fitting for what we're going through now. I don't have the energy or the time to dwell on what's not working. I just think, well, you know, if that friendship is over or it's on the sidelines, I don't have the energy for that right now. My whole energy in the last year has been, how do I get myself better? What else can I do to improve my level of fitness, and doing things like word games and all those things to get my brain working again. You know, there's so much that I can do to get better. That's my new job. That's been my new job for the last year. And it's been no days off, total dedication. And, you know, I'm reaping the rewards of that with all the help and support from family and friends and medics and therapists. And, you know, we don't do it on our own. So reaching out to people that can help us, I'm very good at doing that now. Whereas when I was younger, I thought I could do everything myself.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's so many different things that we can do. And it's, you know, learning about the brain, how it can regenerate, is just amazing. It's completely different to what I was taught, 20, 30 years ago. We were told that when you lose brain cells, then the
you can't regenerate.
And that's nonsense. So I've learned so much about neuroscience and plasticity and, you know, the brain's ability to heal. It's just amazing. And language has got a big, big part in language, and mood has got a big part in how we can help our brains regenerate. So it's fantastic that the amount of research that's being done and what we can learn about this magnificent muscle, I think it is, in our, it's called our brain, that if we exercise it, then it will improve. And what I've found is that if there are broken synapses in the brain, they can mend, or amazingly, they can find another route to connect.
Yes.
I mean, that's fantastic. I've got that inside my head. We've all got it inside our heads. So this isn't anything that I'm doing. I've been given this.
Yeah.
I've been given this tool to recover, and it's just incredible. So,
well, Claire, can you believe that we are actually coming to the end of the show already?
No, we just got started.
I know, isn't it amazing? And, you know, neuroscience is absolutely a phenomenal field, which once again, you know, is just a totally different topic. So, we are coming sort of to the end of our show, so can you please tell our amazing audience how they can connect with you and get hold of you? We'll have it in the show notes, but tell us how we can connect with you.
Okay, so my mobile number is 042-1141-955.
Oh, that's very brave of you putting it out on global radio.
Absolutely. Right.
I love it. And how else can we connect with you?
Okay, I've got a website, www.clarityinyourlife.com. So Clarity is my business name. So it's clarityinyourlife, all lowercase.com. Email is claire@clarityinyourlife.com. And yeah, I mean, obviously, I've not been working for the last year, although I have had a couple of training days recently, which I do personal development training with AIM, Australian Institute of Management. So they've given me 4 days recently, and that was thrilling to be able to stand up for most of the day, sit down for some of it, and deliver training courses. So I'm back, as it were.
Oh, she's back. And you back? Fantastic. I can hear your enthusiasm and your excitement, and it's so awesome. But I do have to stop you there, Claire, because we are coming to the end of this marvelous show. I just really want to thank you for sharing your beautiful story with us. We can just feel the energy and the zest for life coming through. And I just know that the story is going to help all of those people out there who are either experiencing a challenge of their own, whatever that is. Do you have, in one sentence, my lovely Claire, a final, you know, quote or message that you just want to leave in our audience's mind?
Wow, that's a question. I think if we do all the things that we know are healthy for us and healthy for the people around about us, and we're not harming anyone, I have found that the universe has conspired in my favour. It's not difficult. This is simple. It's straightforward. Anyone can do this. I just love the opportunity to share these ideas. There's nothing complicated about it. It's easy.
Absolutely. So we will have your contact details in the show notes for people to connect with you. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Claire's phenomenal story. I trust that this has inspired you and given you that fuel you need to reignite your fire. Remember, as Claire said, know what you're fighting for. She had her amazing family that she came over for and is fighting for. And learn to love yourself and do things that you love. Because when you are happy and when you are striving and you are being authentically you, the universe opens up to you. So I challenge you for this week to do things that make you happy. Do everything that makes you happy and see what happens every day. Focus on happiness, not on what you don't have, on what you do have. And do things that make you happy and watch the wonderful world of awesomeness and happiness and fulfillment open up in front of you. Once again, jump on our Facebook page. Follow the blog post radio. Just jump on the link that this episode is on. You can follow us. You can also connect with me personally on my Facebook page, Petra Williams, or on Women on Fire Australia as well. Thank you again, everyone, for listening. You are phenomenal, absolute rock stars. Keep the love alive, and I'll see you next week.
On Fire Radio.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your moves.
Vons is your entertainment end zone. Look for the Game On player tags when you shop, buy three, and enter to win great prizes like a 65-inch big screen LED TV. Catch the football spirit with the Game On sweepstakes at Vons. Shop with your club card to pick up Glasso Smart Water, 33.8 ounces, two for $3, plus CRV, and Gold Peak Tea, 64 ounces, selected varieties, two for $4, plus CRV. No purchase necessary. Open to residents of Southern California counties listed in rules 18 years and older. Ends January 3rd, 2017. Enter code by January 10th, 2017. Rules at GameOnSoCal.com.